fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Through the workers' blood shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Welcome to Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today it's a salute to Labor Day, celebrated this coming Monday by Americans of all political persuasions, but especially by union members who will cut short their backyard barbecues, their shopping for Labor Day specials at the mall, or that last family trip to the beach in order to march in parades dedicated to those who work for a living. This is a holiday with deep American roots. The first Labor Day was celebrated on Tuesday, September 5th in 1882 in New York City, organized by the Central Labor Union. In the ensuing years, there would be demonstrations and bloodshed in our streets as American workers fought successfully for the right to unionize. Labor has fallen on hard times in recent years. In 1945, more than one-third of all American workers belonged to unions. That number had shrunk to 24% in 1979 and to just 14% in 1998, and to just over 12% this past year. The blame has been placed on a number of factors, including free trade agreements that have shipped manufacturing jobs overseas, competition for jobs by low-wage states without strong union traditions, and a changing workforce in which promises of lifetime employment and pensions have all but disappeared. Our guest today, labor historian James Lawrence, professor emeritus at UW-Marathon County, whose latest book is titled The Unemployed People's Movement, Leftists, Liberals, and Labor in Georgia, 1929 to 1941. Also joining us today, Don Klein. He's the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council. And joining us shortly, we believe, will be Steve Meyer, the president of Local 224 of the U.S. Steelworkers in Wausau. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Ron Holden, president of the Central Labor Council in Wisconsin Rapids. What do you think of the union movement as we approach Labor Day 2009? Why are so few Americans in unions today? Why has the movement been unsuccessful in stopping the loss of good-paying manufacturing jobs in this country? And why do we see workers at companies like Mercury Marine being asked to make wage and benefit concessions under threats that the company will relocate its facility in a non-union shop in Oklahoma? Also, what do you think of the proposed Employee Free Choice Act, which would let workers organize simply by signing a card? We'll be taking your questions on those subjects a little bit later in the program today. Right now, James Lawrence, Don Klein, thanks so much for being with us on Route 51 today, and a few days in advance, happy Labor Day.
Thank you, Glenn.
Pleased to be here.
James, you've written a number of books. Your latest one, again, is titled The Unemployed People's Movement, Leftist Liberals and Labor in Georgia, 1929 to 1941. Just give us a short thumbnail sketch of that, if you could.
Well, it's a study of, the book is a study of working people, which included efforts to form labor unions, but it's more a study of the response of working people to the Great Depression in the state of Georgia and elsewhere in the South. It also involves an attempt to move towards unionization in 1934 that people generally don't understand to be part of Southern history. And my book demonstrates that there was significant desire for organization, but there are a variety of factors, which we don't have time to discuss here, that prevent that from occurring in the 1930s in Georgia.
Well, here we have an area in the Deep South where there was a strong labor movement, at least at one point in time, and yet all through the South today we see companies, automobile companies, and now Mercury Marine, going to southern states predominantly that don't have any kind of a union tradition at all.
That's true. And the problem for southern workers has been that they have had to make a hard trade In other words, accepting employment in return for a lower wage standard historically.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak so much to the contemporary situation, but historically it was the South's advantage, if you will, in luring industry to that area and industrializing. The result, however, for workers was that they needed, or they had to, they were forced to really make this hard choice.
But isn't that the hard choice faced by workers just about everywhere? They're told that, I'm going to bring up Mercury Marine. You join a union, and there's a chance you're going to lose your jobs. Or if you're in a union right now, you got to take wage and benefit cuts in order to keep your job, or we're going to move someplace where the labor situation is a lot more friendly to the employer.
Well, what we're dealing with today is a very complex economic situation that is influenced by globalism. It's influenced by the competition that's worldwide now in nature. It's influenced by the fact that our economy is changing. We become a service economy as much or more than a manufacturing economy, and there are different kinds of problems involved in the organization of workers in a service economy than in a manufacturing economy. And finally, since the 1980s, I would say, since maybe, let's say, 1980, the structure, the legislative structure which governs labor management relations has been tilted towards management as a result of conscious policy decisions and appointments to the NLRB.
That was basically with President Reagan's election. I mean, the first thing he did was fire the Air Traffic Controllers Union.
It began at that time, but that governmental attitude is important over time since the early 1980s. The NLRB, for example, which makes decisions that are very important to organized labor, is only as good as the appointees who are made to that body.
Mm-hmm.
And so the system only works if there's good faith on all sides. Quite frankly, the result of the political character of the 1980s and 90s was that the balance was tipped against workers.
We've had another election. Do you think it's going to tip back the other way?
It remains to be seen what the result will be. There are a number of positive developments on the labor scene. One of them is that some unions are experiencing considerable success today. SEIU, hotel workers, Unite Here. Others are successful. Those unions that are going after the unorganized workers are showing some success. And then, of course, there are possible legislative changes on the horizon. There is the question of the Employee Free Choice Act, which may alter the character of the mm-hmm. labor management relationship. We don't know how yet.
All right. We've set the table for a lot of discussion over the next 45 minutes, and I do want to explore this idea of us being a service economy as opposed to a manufacturing economy. But right now I'd like Don Klein to have a chance to speak. Don, how long have you been involved in the union movement?
I've been a union member, Glenn, since about 39 years.
And you're the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council?
Correct. I've been president about 5 years, been a council member over 10.
All right. I want to get to some serious discussion here, but I'm going to get this plug out of the way right away. The big Labor Day parade coming up on Monday, it's something you folks organize every year. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, thank you very much. The Wausau Labor Day Parade will be on Monday in Wausau, and the parade is scheduled to start at 4 o'clock on Monday. And we will form up on West Wausau Avenue, and the parade will march down North 3rd Avenue, concluding by the Labor Temple on 3rd Avenue.
Now, Don, labor has gone from being, unions have gone from being a third of the labor population to about 12% today. As somebody who's part of the movement, who's an actual worker, what do you think the reason is for that?
There's a lot of factors, and Jim brought some of them out. The change to our country, the job markets, the economy, there's a whole bunch of reasons why we're having problems. Mainly, I'll break into it, is like outsourcing of jobs. By our country changing from a manufacturing base to a service base has taken a lot of jobs away from the worker.
Now, isn't that part of outsourcing? I mean, when you send all the manufacturing jobs overseas, well, that leaves you nothing with but service jobs.
You know, the issue is that there's been a local agency, companies have closed here. They've taken those jobs, say, to China. Now, they'll pay some person in China 16 cents an hour to make the shirt that we are wearing. And yet, when it gets here, we're paying the price you would pay it as a U.S.-made product. So there is no cost savings for the American consumer. But the earning power goes to the corporations, and the CEOs are making huge amounts of money on people. And the profit lines, rather be 3 or 4%, seem to be up to 10 or 12%. That they don't seem to be satisfied with making a product. They seem more satisfied with the higher wage earnings.
Jim Lawrence, when Ross Perot ran for president, he said if the North American Free Trade Act was passed, we'd hear a giant sucking sound of all the manufacturing jobs, the good-paying manufacturing jobs leaving this country. He seems to have been proven right.
Yes, and the answer to this problem, it seems to me, is not to try to alter the reality of living in a global economy, but rather to try to argue, I'm speaking now in terms of governmental policy, try to argue in favor of fair trade rather than free trade. That is to say, some of the workers and some of the manufacturing establishments south of the border and in other places aren't required to deal with important and necessary environmental regulations and so on. And so it's important to try to level the playing field and to find a place in which American workers can attempt to compete.
But isn't the whole idea of free trade basically union busting? I mean, you can look at it that way. You've got employers who want these workers who are making only 16 cents a day, as Don just said. They go to places that don't have to meet our environmental regulations. The workers don't have health care benefits. They don't have anything. It's just as bad as the child labor and the slave labor that we had back in the 1800s before all these battles were fought for union recognition.
Well, that is the case. That is to say, capitalism is a wonderful economic system and machine. It's not necessarily a moral system, and the consequence is that without some kind of structure or framework of governmental controls, governmental regulations, it's possible for workers to be abused. Now, in our society, in our economy, we have move to a point at which there are at least modest or minimal protections for working people. And I think the objective probably ought to be to try to enforce or to, we can't enforce, but try to encourage the same type of protections for workers on a worldwide basis.
That's the question. Why can't we make these people rise up to our standards instead of putting into play a situation where our people are forced to go down to theirs?
One of the key issues, Glenn, in the, with the market, job market, is health care. And I'm not going to open up a door on that one, but
we will.
Yeah, it's be challenging. Most manufacturers, most working people today, the number one topic that you'll talk about is health care. Manufacturers pay insurance for their employees, and it takes a large portion of their earning power to pay any wage for any worker, whether it be union or not. One way to shave the cost, because there is no real good program out there for everybody, is to outsource jobs. And lobbyists put pressure on the Congress of the United States and on the President, those rules and regulations are passed which allow outsourcing. but sometimes it does to be treated fairly for everybody. It just seems like it benefits more the profit line than it does the workforce itself. So when the current president was elected with the large support of labor, because there are 47 million Americans in this country who have no health care. So right now, those of us that are in this room and others outside are paying that cost. And since we're paying the cost, manufacturers have to bear that burden of their fair portion of that cost, which dries up their bottom line and the profit line. So I know there's a lot of hype out there on health care. There's a lot of misinformation, a lot of static. The bottom line is the American people voted in Mr. Obama to have a health care program. We voted him in to do that. And I think they've got to take and narrow it down to providing a support for that 47 million Americans so the burden of the health care program can be removed from the general public to be spread out across the board. Until we get some kind of a hold on health care, the rising costs are staggering. For every raise I get, my health care program goes up the same. We've been flatlined, per se, in our wages for about 6-8 years. Every time we get a raise, health care goes up. There's no hope for us. Guys like me who are 61 years old, want to retire in a couple of years, most companies cannot offer you any health care coverage from the time you retire till 65, which is Medicare. So there is no cushion out there available to help us retire. Under new health care program, if they can do some gap closing, it'd help a lot of Americans move on and retire, brings in a lot of young people into the workforce, and then we'll bring in all that new knowledge and that energy that the companies want.
Don Klein, the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council. We've also got Jim Lawrence, a labor historian. We're talking about labor issues, about unions, about their top priorities, the Employee Free Choice Act, and universal health care. What do you think? We're going to open this up to the listeners, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Do you think health care should be a right and not just a privilege? Do you think, as Don Klein just said, President Obama was elected to implement universal health care and we ought to follow the dictates of the electorate and do exactly that? Or do you think this is a step towards socialism, as some have charged? The lines are open. This is your show, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of goons and ginks and company finks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called. And when the Legion boys come around, she always stood her ground.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. My guests today are Jim Lawrence, a historian and an author, UW Marathon County professor, also Don Klein, the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council. We're talking about labor unions and labor, and let's go right to the phones. We've got Harry from northern Wisconsin on the line. Harry, you're on Route 51.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. You know, for everyone that's for this universal health care and everything else, all I got to say is, when is the last time you've been in a VA hospital for treatment? When is the last time you've visited someone who is at a VA hospital? It's scary. I do not want to see that. I mean, if universal health care is so wonderful, why are all these Canadians coming down to the States to have surgeries done?
Well, I think, Harry, the proposal doesn't call for the government treating everyone, only the people who can't get insurance through private insurance companies. And there are a lot of people who fall under that category, people with pre-existing conditions. No insurance company will insure somebody with a pre-existing condition. They'd go out of business if they did that. So what do you do for those people?
Considering I've had three spinal surgeries, I have no problem getting health insurance. doctors call me 85% disabled. I have no problem getting insurance. And yes, I still work. I don't live off the government. I pay into it yet.
Gentlemen?
You know, it seems that everybody that wants this health care is people who don't work, who don't pay taxes.
Well, Don Klein, you work and you pay taxes, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do every day. I work 6 days a week. And go ahead.
I think we have to recognize that the statistics do indicate that there are 47 million Americans who are without health care. And there are all sorts of other horror stories that we could begin to tell about the system that involve problems that need to be addressed. I think the moral question to be addressed is, what is the obligation of not only the government and the society to those least able to provide for themselves?
No, you make a point here. The people that are unable to provide for themselves. My problem is the people that are able to provide for themselves but choose not to work. And I have a feeling that's basically what this is going after. I mean, you say 47 million without health insurance. Does that coincide with the same amount of people living on welfare that multi-generational families and housing authority buildings that have never worked a day in their life? You know, this is my problem. I see 38% of my money supporting shiftless people who are able to work but choose not to.
Harry, you've made your point. We really appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Harry in northern Wisconsin, just one of many opinions on the subject of universal health care and the Employee Free Choice Act, two of the priorities of labor. We're looking at Labor Day. We're looking at the history of the union movement. And we want to hear from you at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. My guests, historian Jim Lawrence and worker and union member Don Klein. More after this news.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Animal Dental Center of Milwaukee and Oshkosh, a veterinary specialist working with pet owners and their veterinarians, providing dental and oral disease care for pets throughout Wisconsin. Information at mypetsdentist.com.
Now, if you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. You got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, it won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kid to the seashore. It ain't quite this simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be awaiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then.
You're listening to Talkin' Union Blues with Pete Seeger. You're also listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Happy Labor Day. We are talking about Labor Day, about the history of unions, their current influence on American society, their declining influence, their top priorities. And we've got full phone banks right now, but when they clear up, you can try to call at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. My guests, author and labor historian Jim Lawrence of UW-Marathon County, also Don Klein, the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council, and joining us right now by telephone, Ron Holden, the president of the Central Labor Council in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Ron. You're on Route 51.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Ron, what do you consider to be the biggest challenges facing labor in the Wisconsin Rapids area right now?
Well, we've had a number of shutdowns in the paper mills. We lost one entire paper mill down in Port Edwards at Domtar. The paper industry has always been one of our backbones of our industry in this area. I guess technology probably hurts us more than anything. I mean, nowadays, if you want to send somebody a letter of some type, you email it. You know, it doesn't go by mail anymore. It doesn't get printed on paper hardly.
Now, I gave Don Klein a chance to promote the Labor Day Parade in Wausau. You have a Labor Day picnic in Wisconsin Rapids. Is that correct?
We do. We have it's called our Labor Day Celebration. It's on Labor Day, September 7th. It starts at 11 o'clock and goes till 6. It's at Robinson Park. We have a big lineup. We have Rumors. It's a band that'll play from 11 to 2. Spicy Thai will play from 3 to 6. That's a big show band. We have a pig roast. We have brats and hamburgers and wine coolers and beer and soda and water and everything to purchase. And it's a truly just a community event. We bring the entire community out to this event.
Now, Ron, Don Klein mentioned the two biggest priorities facing labor today as universal health care and the Employee Free Choice Act. Would you agree with that?
Health care reform is there. I'm not saying we need universal health care, so I'm not sure if we could ever get there or if we're at that stage just yet. But we definitely need health care reform.
And what about the Employee Free Choice Act?
Well, right now, the companies have the upper hand. I mean, they have the people there all day long. They can talk non-union to them and everything else. It's, the system is set up very unfair. Like the CEO of Walmart once said, he said, we're driving a bus right now. We don't want to give the wheel to anybody else.
Well, we've got a news item today, and I'd like Don and Jim to voice their reaction as well, if they'd like. Mitch McConnell, who's a Senate Majority Leader, just today said that none of the 40 Republicans in the U.S. Senate support legislation that would allow workers to join a union simply by signing cards. McConnell called it the Employee Forced Choice Act. He said Democrats would have to do it alone. And he claimed that essentially this would take away the right of workers to have a secret ballot for union representation. Your reaction to that?
Well, that's completely false. The secret ballot is still there. If one-third of the workers want to have an NLRB election at the workplace, they have that right, and it goes to a secret ballot. It's not taking away the secret ballot. It's giving the people a free choice. They can choose to use a card sign-up, or they can choose to use a secret ballot. It's like this country is built on free choices. We all should have a free choice.
It's also true that there are other provisions of that legislation that are important, provide for the potential of arbitration, encourage workers and management to come together within, I think it's within a 90-day period, I'm not positive, and if they can't come to an agreement, then go to arbitration. So there are other provisions of the legislation that are quite important as well. And I think he's absolutely right that there is the option to go with an election in the legislation. There's just another avenue toward forming a union.
Well, Don Klein, what I've read is that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has taken this off the table for the time being. Do you realistically have any hope at all that something like this will be passed, given the problems they're having with health care?
Well, health care, again, is a big, huge issue. Workers' Free Choice Act is designed and proposed to help people have a chance to defend their jobs, and that's unionism. And join a workforce that promotes safety, fair wages, and treat the workers with courtesy and respect. Unfortunately, with the lobby groups and things of the economy today, it seemed like the bigger bang for the buck you can make and let the worker be put to the side. There's a huge movement out there to eliminate the middle income, rather be to two sources, either lower income or higher income. With the present condition we have today, the middleman is pretty well being pushed out of the market. As long as they're taking away the manufacturing jobs, which is middle America, the auto cars closing, the jobs that are gone even in Wausau area, Marathon County, we have 3,000 people without jobs in Marathon County.
So you're saying that our middle class is disappearing and we're becoming a country of the very rich and the very poor. That's an entirely different, complete, hour-long program, and maybe we'll have that someday. Right now I want to go to the phones. Carol in Wausau has been waiting patiently. Carol, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And,
you're welcome.
Thanks to your guests that are on. I actually am a single mom living in Wausau, and worked for many years, paid my taxes, paid in, and returned to school. In fact, I started back at UWMC, but I think I was a little bit too late to take any of Professor Lawrence's classes. In any case, I graduated from UW Stevens Point degrees in teaching and have yet, it's over 5 years ago, have yet to be able to find a permanent job. And so to speak to both the labor and the health care issue, I haven't had health insurance. I'm working two part-time jobs looking for permanent work. And so to all of those issues, it's just not there. And it is incredibly hard for those of us who are really trying.
What are you doing? Do you have health care insurance right now?
Gratefully, because I have minor children, I have Badger Care coverage. And I've been so grateful. I haven't really had to use it much, but I'm extremely grateful to have it.
Badger Care, again, is a government program.
Yeah.
State program. Mm-hmm.
So, Carol, what's your point or what's your question for our guests?
Well, I guess I'm just responding to, it would be wonderful if there were unions for, substitute teachers, which there aren't, and even long-term subs don't give the benefits. You do the same kind of work and the same amount of work, but there just aren't the benefits. And, I think it was Gary who called and said, a lot of these people just aren't working. I would beg to disagree, because there are so many people really trying, and it's just very, very difficult here.
Carol, thanks so much for your phone call. I'm going to go right to the next call since the calls are stacked up. We'll go to Lori in Mosinee. Lori, you're on Route 51.
Yes, hi. I just had a couple of comments on the healthcare portion of it. My husband works in a union position, and we are very blessed to have very, very good healthcare. But I think the last caller just really underlined the people in most need, in many cases, of coverage. And I'm not sure that the government necessarily needs to be involved, but I guess I'm wondering what labor is doing to help the smaller employers that aren't able, primarily for financial reasons, to get health insurance for their employees to be able to afford it, so that we can have more of a robust private system rather than have to, kind of go to a government universal type, healthcare type system. I'm really in favor of these kinds of cooperatives and things like that that are proposed because of the fact that, if you really are poor, like one caller mentioned, these welfare people, they typically are on Medicaid. And the same is true for a lot of the handicapped or obviously people over the age of 65.
Well, once again, those are all government programs.
Those are all government programs. But the people that are really being squeezed are those middle Americans and the union jobs, quite honestly, and the manufacturing jobs are going away. And I'm just wondering, what solutions are available for those people that are working without health coverage.
All right, Lori, thanks so much for the call. I don't know if Don and Ron in Wisconsin Rapids have any solutions for small business people, which probably aren't unionized because they're so small. But, Jim,
right.
do you have any thoughts?
The short answer to the question is, of course, that the labor unions have been pressing for health care coverage or health insurance that would cover all American citizens. So unions are behind that legislation. There's no question about that. Now, the second point that you might not be aware of is that it's difficult to talk about this because we don't have a bill that's before the president now. We've got all these different bills that are being considered.
Right.
But as I understand it, at least one of them, and perhaps more than one of them, provide for exemptions for small employers, I think, under whose payrolls are under $500,000 a year. That might be not quite the right number. Another approach that some of these laws or proposals take is the provision of subsidies to small employers. So some of the legislation that has been introduced attempts to cope with that problem of the small employer. But universal coverage or some kind of guarantee that all Americans have access to some kind of insurance is something that unions have stood for.
All right, we're going to go to another phone call. Let's go to, we've got Fernando in Wausau. Fernando, you're on Route 51. Hello, Fernando. Fernando, you're on Route 51. You're on now.
Okay, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, this is such a complex topic that sometimes everybody gets lost in some of the numbers that get bandied about. And, you know, that 47 million number has been so discredited that I'm kind of sorry that people are still using it. The, as you pointed out, very poor people already are covered under Badger Care or Medicaid. And people over 65 are already covered by a government program, Medicare. The people, the 47 million, at least 20 million by estimates, are people who have chosen not to take health insurance because they're young and they've decided just not to spend the money. And about another 15 million are illegal aliens. And so when you get right down to it, and it's hard to pin that number down, it's a very small percentage of people that actually do not have health insurance. But so I kind of wish we wouldn't use that number anymore. But the real point I wanted to make, I'm a physician, and most of the patients I take care of are Medicare patients. When we are looking at the government suddenly deciding that there's a crisis that didn't exist a year ago or 2 years ago, and that this crisis mode means that we have to rapidly change everything, we have to keep in mind the government currently controls 62% of all health care dollars through Medicaid, Medicare, SCHIP, the Medicare drug benefit, et cetera, 62%. And so what's their track record with controlling that much of the healthcare dollars? Well, the Medicare Trust Fund has been telling Congress for years that Medicare is insolvent, that there's too much expenditure in Medicare, and that it's been run in a fiscally unsound manner. So if you think about it, if you're picking somebody to run your company, you're the guy in charge of picking a CEO for your company, and this is a very big company, you look at the track record, right? So the track record of government has been an inability to actually manage what they already do control. So when you look at Kennedy's
Fernando,
bill...
Fernando, do you know of anybody on Medicare right now who would choose not to be on Medicare, or anybody who's getting Social Security who would not choose not to have Social Security?
Oh, absolutely not. Everybody loves it. But you know
then,
why?
Then how can you say that it's mismanaged?
Oh, fiscally mismanaged. I mean, if you look at the growth curve of Medicare, it's insolvent.
Isn't that just because of the aging population and
no.
because of health care costs that are going up for reasons that the government has no control over?
Well, then we're going to make the government be in charge. How are they going to do any different with more control? You see, the government really does have control.
Fernando, let me give Jim a chance to respond.
Well, the thought that occurs to me is this. What the government might be able to do that's not being done at the present time is to introduce greater competition into the system, which might have the impact or result of either lowering rates or of improving coverage. So that I think that's a positive side of, you know, what the government might be able to provide. I think it's also true, as Glenn has pointed out, that those who have benefited from federal government programs are certainly not willing to give them up. We're simply saying, or I think that these folks would simply be saying that the same kind of benefits that are available to some of our citizens be made available to all of our citizens.
Jim, Fernando, I want you to have a quick follow-up here, and then we've got to move on. We're down to our last 10 minutes.
Well, you know, you make a very good point, but that's the whole problem. The problem is we can't afford it. We can't afford what's happening with Medicare. And your point about the government potentially bringing in competition, they've been running Medicare since 1965. They haven't brought it in. They can't bring it in. They won't make the tough decisions. And so they really are not capable of bringing in free market solutions. There are free market solutions. Paul Ryan, actually, from the southern part of the state, has a beautiful healthcare plan that is all free market driven. That if you read it, it makes sense because it does precisely what you just said.
Fernando, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it, but we are running short on time. Don Klein, you had a response that you wanted to make.
Yeah, a real brief comment, Fernando. I appreciate you calling in, but also, you know, last year the state of Wisconsin tried to pass a law, a medical bill that would have all citizens of Wisconsin up to about 98% have some kind of health care program. But they compromised because of the state budgeting. So then the governor came up with extending BadgerCare, which now covers a lot of people. And without that extension, there would be a lot of problems for health care in our state alone. So I understand your complaint, but if we don't do something on the whole with Medicare, health cares, Medicare will not have enough funding in the years ahead to sustain it. So we need to find a better program to ease some of that burden. And again, I thank you for your time.
And Ron Holden in Wisconsin Rapids,
yes,
your perspective.
Just one comment. Basically, a lot of people say we're trying to fast-track this. You know, the government's fast-tracking this and everything else. We've been working on trying to get health care under control for 70 years.
That's right.
Richard Nixon tried getting it done. I mean, a Republican.
Well, actually, the first person to press for universal health care was Teddy Roosevelt,
correct,
a Republican, in 1915, which is more like 95 years.
And so we're not setting any speed records trying to get health care under control. It's time somebody starts doing something. I mean, insurance companies got to be able to, you know, not refuse to pay claims and stuff like this. I mean, this is all simple stuff, and you know, healthcare reform has got to be done. I don't say we really need national healthcare or something like that, but we definitely need a competitive system. We need to be cost down. I mean, we're spending like 20% of our gross income right now on Medicare. Medical needs.
Well, we've been talking about health care a lot, and that's because it's one of the top priorities of unions and the labor movement. The subject of the show is the labor movement and its current status in America as we approach Labor Day. Our guests are Don Klein, who's with the Marathon County Labor Council. Also, we have Ron Holden with the Central Labor Council in Wisconsin Rapids, and historian Jim Lawrence. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this.
We're very pleased to have Wisconsin Governor Jim Dyer with us and federal...
I guess we should have known
this nine-pound hammer is a little too heavy for my size, for my size. I'm a-going on the mountain, going to see my baby, but I ain't coming back. Well, I ain't coming back. Roll on, buddy, don't you roll so slow. How can I roll when the wheels won't go?
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. This hour is gone very quickly, and we only have time for one more caller. Unfortunately, so we're going to go to Jim in Central Wisconsin. Jim, you're on Route 51.
Yes, Glenn. The health care issue can be settled real quick as soon as Obama gives all of us the same health care. He has total coverage, totally free. His retirement, they serve one term, anybody in Congress. They get their salary for life, and the UAW is totally responsible for breaking and bankrupting the whole auto industry, Chrysler, Ford, and GM.
Now, wait a minute. You've hit us with two different things. I'm going to just take the second one. The United Auto Workers is responsible for bankrupting Chrysler and Ford. Don Klein, your response to that?
Yeah, I think if the manufacturers would have said like they did back in the early 60s, they had cars that would get 40 miles to the gallon and bought up all those patents throughout the last 30, 40 years and put them away or destroyed them, now they're going to someone's going to blame the workers themselves. Well, the fault lies with the manufacturers, again, who could have designed better cars and better engines. The key is engines. And got us out of some of the oil problems we were with because there were some deals made to keep these cars at the low mileage and also help us burn up all that gasoline.
Ron Holden?
That's false. I got a 15-year-old 94 Buick, and I get 33 miles to the gallon with a Buick LeSabre.
Well, I own a Buick LeSabre, too, and it gets excellent gas mileage.
Right. Yeah.
Ron Holden, your response very quickly.
Well, the UA, you know, they negotiate benefits. The CEOs and everything else, everybody sat down negotiation, talked about contracts, what you could get for health care, what you could get for pensions, et cetera. To just blame one side for this
is ridiculous. Yeah, but for $80,000 a year and half the people are working, the other half the people are sitting watching.
But the CEOs negotiate these contracts.
I know, and it was wrong.
Why blame it all
because
on one side?
UAW squeezed them so hard over 40 years, just squeezed them that hard.
They were making billion-dollar profits.
That's just the same way that...
these companies were making billion-dollar profits. How the worker was going home with a paycheck.
With the new unions where you just have to sign a card, you're going to break the rest of the industry in this country.
We're only 13% of the industry. How can we be blamed for everything that's going wrong? I mean, there's 87% that's doing other things, too.
87% is doing pretty good.
I'm going to have to leave it right there. Jim, thanks. Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. Ron Holden, last quick observation on the union movement and where it stands today.
Well, I believe we're alive. We're alive and we're strong yet. I believe we set the wages for the middle class. We try to bring everybody up with us. And I think we do. The community is great. I mean, there's more civic participation when you got a strong union and everything in town. It just, everything's better.
And Don Klein, last word from you.
I appreciate being here, Ron. So hi down there in Rapids, and tell Michelle hi for me sometime.
Want to thank, and Jim Lawrence, very quickly, one last word from you.
I just want people to understand the role that unions and workers have played in building this society and the economy, and remember that they are the people who brought you the weekend.
We want to thank today's guests, author and labor historian Jim Lawrence of UW-Marathon County, Don Klein, the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council, and also Ron Holden, president of the Central Labor Council in Wisconsin Rapids. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder that the Wausau Labor Day Parade takes place at 4 p.m. this Monday, starting at First Avenue downtown. The Wisconsin Rapids Labor Day Picnic gets underway at 11:30 that morning in Robinson Park. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, and musical selections by Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Cisco Houston, Sonny Terry, Merle Travis, and Peter, Paul, and Mary. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
It's a hammer of justice. It's a bell of freedom. It's a song about love between brothers and sisters all over this land. It's a hammer of justice.